The views and opinions heard on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of the host.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Real Spiritual Talk Radio.
My breathing had stopped for so long that my heart actually ended up stopping.
He saw what I did and said that I was going to die.
And then I remember being gone. I wasn't there anymore.
I sort of lifted up about 6 feet above my body.
A pinprick of light appeared and came rushing toward me faster than the speed of light.
And then this light, all of a sudden it was all completely around me.
He says, I am God. Yes, I am real.
The main message was loving yourself and loving others.
It was clearly shown to me.
It was really hard to put into words. It felt like I had been there before.
It was just this very personal, impersonal, unconditional love.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to another edition of Real Spiritual Talk Radio. I am your host, Lamont Gates, once again bringing you the world of faith, metaphysicality, and spirituality. Today, my guest was trained in the philosophy of the here and now, but learned after her experience that so much more awaited. And in turn, her vision of reality has been forever shaped. Let's get it started. Welcome to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Joining me via Skype is near-death experiencer, Dr. Kiyanush Kasai. Dr. Kasai, welcome to Real Spiritual Talk Radio.
Hi, Lamont. Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
I thank you very much for coming on. Now, I understand you are in the medical field, correct?
Yes, I am. I'm kind of semi-retired. I've shifted to coaching, but yes, my background is healthcare.
Great. And you are a researcher whose main focus is on pathology, if I'm not mistaken, also.
Yes, that's correct, Lamont. I'm a research pathologist from Johns Hopkins Hospital, and I've been doing research as a working there as a research scientist for a couple of years, and I have some publication in Nature's magazine. But I shifted to coaching, you know, as we are going to talk about it later in life, you know, gradually, and I became certified in emotional intelligence and a spiritual intelligence coach. I'm currently also working as a fellow at the Institute of Coaching, which is a Harvard affiliated, and I'm serving in the IOC REI Council, the Race, Equity, and Inclusion. And as you know, I'm the founder of the My Conscious Coaching Group, which is a nonprofit 501c3.
That's wonderful to hear, because many times near-death experiencers already have preconceived religious notions before their near-death experience. So it will be great to hear from someone who's trained from a scientific philosophy. But before we get into your account, let's go backwards. Give us a little historical context. What was it like growing up as a child, for example, hearing about subjects of religion and or spirituality? What was it you were taught in this particular area?
That's an interesting question, Lamont. Yeah, I was born in a family, both teachers, and they were more culturally and traditionally religious, not strictly religious. And my parents were both in education, and my father was an open-minded biologist, also a scientist, you know, and teaching in a well-recognized community college. And my mother also was an elementary school teacher. The value that I've been raised with, as I remember, was God and goodness and the honesty and humanity. So the kind of spirituality that I have been raised with has been a horizontal spirituality more than a vertical one, just doing good to people and to be helpful with them, be considerate to the poor and the sick, and take care of those that are in a lower socioeconomic status, even while we weren't rich ourselves. And I always remember that my mother was helping with the food banks through the school, gathering clothes or, you know, gathering money for the low incomes. And my father was doing free tutoring, you know, for his talented students who were struggling in life. So spirituality for me was more kind of humanity. That was my religious, my training was in that, to be a good human and to do what is right for people and for myself, you know, as a human being. And but I also have religious memories, especially with my grandparents. They were more, you know, religious, and with my grandmothers especially, and my aunt while they were praying. And my mom sometimes were taking me to the mosque, you know, or the funeral in the cemeteries to visit her grandparents, you know, graves. And that was actually, when I go back in time, the first time that I was asking myself the question, what is God? Who is God? And what is religious? So as a little girl, you know, that's the memory that I have. So overall, in brief, humanity was my religious, being raised up in a family, you know, both parents, teacher.
Sounds like you were adopting a humanist philosophy very early in life. Now, you are originally from Iran, correct? Where Islam is the predominant religion.
Yes, it is. And as I said, you know, my family are traditionally and culturally, they were religious, but I don't remember, my father never forced me to practice, you know, just the Islam's, you know, practices or the prayers. So he was more, you know, feeding me with the, you know, the subject of the humanity and waiting for me to be awakening, you know, to what I want and how I see the religious and how I discover the God and what I choose for myself that is best for me.
So let's go into your near-death experience. Tell us how it actually occurred.
Yeah, I remember I was in 2006, actually. I was a fellow, pathology fellow at Johns Hopkins Hospital, and I found out that I have this 20-centimeter annoyingly fast-growing mass in the size of the cantaloupe in my abdomen. So we did the ultrasound and discovered all of these. And you can imagine the anxiety and the stress that I came with it. So we just, since my husband also was a physician and pathologist, and we knew good surgeons, and at the same time, you know, we were in a transition, moving from this place to that place, we managed to have the surgery immediately. And that was important because the mass has been pressuring my internal organs, and I needed to have the surgery ASAP. I remember the day after surgery, the nurses came to my room and they wanted to take me to the bathroom, changing my dressing, give me a shower. And I remember I just had been walking before too. So I got out of the bed and started, you know, taking the steps toward the bathroom. And my blood pressure also wasn't low or something. They just measured it, you know, a few minutes before. And while I was looking at the bathroom door to hold my hand, you know, to reach out, suddenly I felt that I'm flying and being sucked through a dark tunnel very fast, you know, just like in milliseconds of time. And it wasn't the bathroom anymore. I reached to an open, wide, infinite space and seeing myself standing on the edge and border of a new periphery, that being surrounded by a loving, understanding, cuddling, warm energy and light that is, I cannot find, you know, any appropriate word to put it, that how that energy and that feeling was. And they were waiting for me. And I arrived there and I stood on the edge on that border. And I was waiting for the permission to take one more extra step and get to the other side and become one and be solved and dissolved in that being. And I really was, you know, felt in peace and in a love, in a different kind of love, you know, that, as I said, I can't express it in words. They were all just feelings. And at the same time, I wanted to take that extra step, but I couldn't. So I was just like, my feet were nailed to the ground and waiting for the permission to move forward. Something had stopped me while I'm still being pulled and attracted toward that other side and that energy. And that living light at the same time was whispering to my ear all the answers and the secrets that this universe, you know, had. It was whispering in my ear all the questions that I had in life, even the questions that I didn't have were answered. So all the secrets of this universe were being told to me at that moment. And I was absorbing it all while I'm being pulled to that light. And still I wasn't able to move. And anything, you know, that I needed to know in my life and even from the universe, I knew it then. And that kind of understanding for me, I never had experienced it before. And the interesting part is just there was no time and there was no language there also. So the conversation that source, that energy, that divine, you want to call it God, so just had with me, the conversation was without any word, without just like a telepathic conversation. And it was from heart to heart, like mind to mind, or maybe better you say it from consciousness to consciousness. So, and I felt that I am one with that consciousness. I am one with that being, and I have come from there, and that's where I belong to. And I was temporarily back where I was, we call it Earth. And now I'm arriving to where I needed to be and where I have come from. And as that part of that giant consciousness, you know, that energy and that healing and that peace and that loving, you know, light was filling me up. And at the same time, I started to sensing and paying attention to the surrounding of that light. And I saw that I'm hearing other noises of that, like the celebration and some familiar, you know, being. And some of them I knew that they were like my grandparents. Some of them I had known them, that who are they? I wasn't seeing them, but I knew that it's them. So it's just like all my ancestors back to the beginning were and celebrating my arrivals. And again, that magnetic attraction of that loving energy still was growing and growing and continuing, getting bigger and bigger. And at the same time, I heard another noise. And that one was really familiar because it was my husband's voice. And he was calling me, Kianush, Kianush. And that was really strange for me because he really interrupted, you know, that party for me. And I started to hear him more louder and louder the more he was calling me. And I got curious about it. What does he want? And then while I was standing there and I just paused or maybe asked permission from the source or that being worried with myself. And the moment that I got worried, I started to think that maybe he's calling me and needed something about my son, which he was 8 years old at that time. And I said, dutiful, you know, wife and mother, you know, I that was always, you know, the priority, but I didn't want to leave there. So it's a kind of asking again in a non-verbal language from the source, from that divine, that, you know, can I just have 1 second, you know, to see what he wants and what is this calling about? And they were telling me, you are allowed to go and we are waiting for you. And while I was just deciding, you know, to come back, still I couldn't turn my face from that loving energy. And I was just keep asking them, you know, like a promise, just save my seat. I'm going to come back in a second. Just give me a minute, you know, let's see what he wants. And I'm going to come back, you know, again. And while I didn't want to leave there, but I knew that I'm needed back there, back, you know, behind me. And so while I turned my face toward my husband's voice that was calling me, and I felt again I'm being sucked in that tunnel, you know, and just again in a fraction of no time, I saw myself, I opened my eyes, I was on the floor of the hospital, in the bathroom floor, and the nurses and the CPR team were there, and my husband, you know, with his big, wide open eyes, you know, scared, you know, was still kept looking, calling my name. And I was just, you know, surprised at what happened to me. Still was on the floor, but the nurses came. They were ready for the CPR, but then they just decided not to continue because I came into it. And that was my experience.
That was probably incredibly overwhelming for you, especially being a doctor trained in science. Two follow-up questions I have based on your account. As a medical physician, you have probably only been trained to think in physical and materialistic terms. But what were your thoughts coming back from this particular experience?
No, actually, yeah, it changed my whole perception. I mean, not mentioning that it changed my whole life. So that was my point, you know, the shift that I had gradually and starting, you know, withdrawing from the medical research, starting to go into yoga and meditation and, you know, shifted to the coaching. And I was curious about it. I was curious. I was confused. But I knew it was real. I knew it was real. And I wasn't telling anyone. I even didn't tell my husband for couple of weeks after, you know, because I was just keep reviewing with myself. And I was, to be honest with you, I was kind of upset that I'm back and just mad of my husband. Why did you call me? So I wanted still to be there. Just go and pick, you know, in that loving place that I belong to. And now, you know, I'm back here and I don't know when I can go there. But then again, I was happy because I had responsibility. Then who would have taken care of my son? I think that conflict, that living between these two life for a long time, you know, was my kind of struggling. And because I wanted to be there, but I was on the earth. But at the same time, I came back with many gifted and skills, you know, and I had this, you know, seeing these colors in a different way. So I was experiencing life in a different way. And as you said, you know, as a physician, as a scientist, you know, I knew that was an vagal syncope because, you know, I had a vagal syncope before. That wasn't that. And I knew that it wasn't the dreaming too because it was so vivid and live, you know, it was living in me and with me. And the memory that still I have from that experience is as vivid as I have from my parents. So if it was a dream, it would have been diluted and, you know, being forgotten, especially that I'm aging and I'm forgetting so many things. But that, you know, that experience, you know, still is live and vivid with me. And I just have to close my eyes and see myself standing that on that edge and all the, you know, the feeling and the, you know, the loving peace is coming to me. And actually, that's my getaway when I'm in a difficult, most stressful situation to center myself. And yeah, I agree with you. It was difficult. I was curious, but there's also, you know, for me, more confirmation also with that spiritual training that I have been raised with as a, you know, little girl, you know, in a traditional family that they believed in God and they believed in spirituality.
My second follow-up question, you described receiving all the answers to your questions and non-questions. Do you recall any of these answers you received?
I wish I had, and it's kind of yes and no. It's just like, you know, when you see a movie and then you forget it and then you see it again and you remember, oh, I've seen this movie. So it's just kind of, for me, is that kind of knowing, you know, and feeling. So I have some kind of, you know, I don't want to call it sixth, seventh, or eighth sense, whatever it is. I have some kind of gifted as foreseeing, you know, things that are coming. And again, it's just like clicking, you know, feeling in the, you know, in the blank. So I feel it. I sense it. I know things. I know things without even I know why I know this stuff. For example, my husband is losing his glasses, or I just, you know, looking for a solution for something, you know, and things happen to me and I just tell him, look there. And then he goes and he finds his glasses. Or I'm just looking for something on the internet, and I just centered myself, see myself, you know, and ask the guidance, and I find my answers, you know, and my paths, you know, to the right direction. So things coming to me, and I know them without knowing them, especially with the people, you know, I see true people. I see the souls. I see the pains that, you know, that there are struggles with it. And I don't know if this is a good thing or it's a bad thing. So, but it also has been an advantage for me in my coaching practices. So that I was being able to connect better with my clients and to understand them, to be more present for them.
So it sounds like you certainly did return with some sort of precognition or sixth sense, which is common in many near-death experiences. Going back to you saying you did not want to initially tell anyone about your experience, except your husband, but as a physician, did you ever go out on a limb and discuss this with any of your physician counterparts?
Actually, not for a long time, until my husband, you know, that was interesting. He wasn't even believing me at the beginning, you know, as a scientist and a pathologist. He had to see everything under microscope to believe that what he's saying. And I don't blame him for that. And justifying, you know, with all the science, you know, possibility of it. But then one time I was just keep telling him, you know, this happened, that happened. And one time he called me from his way to work and he said, I'm hearing something in the NPR. It's about Barbara Bradley's books about the fingerprints of God. And she's talking about the same thing that you have been keep telling me every day, every week in the past couple of months. So maybe you want to read this book. And I just, you know, just I love him even more for just telling me that now that I'm looking back. That book really opened me to the world of research. So I found out that that wasn't only me, because I was scared to tell people and they think I'm crazy or I've lost my mind. But when I read her book, I found about that her research, you know, for 10 years that she has been doing this research on the NDEs and NDEs and the spiritual awakenings. And I, as a research scientist, I started to do my own research. And then from there, I found out, you know, the IANS, International Association of Near-Death Studies, which right now, you know, I'm a member in it. I'm also as a facilitator. Actually, I have an event on March 28th that I'm facilitating a group on IANS, you know, for the end of the year. And I have kept my, you know, my communication, I mean, the meetings and being in touch with them since back then. But to give you the answer, short answer to your question, no, I didn't for many, many years. But then eventually, when I did my research and I found out, you know, that there are like 40,000 people like me, you know, around the globe have had this experience. I started writing my book. I wrote my chapter books, Beautiful Scars. And I thought that's the time, you know, that I tell the world, you know, and I made the website and I also founded the nonprofit Conscious Coaching with initiatives in coaching in healthcare and education eventually after the book was published.
So how were you received by your medical counterparts after they learned of your account?
Yes, I mean, different reactions. So as I said, education, you know, is one of, you know, the initiatives that we have, you know, in our nonprofit is education, coaching in education. So the physician who have been reading and hearing about the research, they felt more receptive. And it just depended on what was the mindset. But it for sure, it made them all curious. And it made them, you know, and it was inspirational for all of them. And I have a friend that she even doesn't believe, you know, she's a kind of like an atheist or just doesn't believe in any religious. But she read my book and she said, when I was reading it, I was crying. And it was so inspirational and uplifting for me. And whatever is going on to in afterlife, you made me to think about how should I live my life here in this earth. And for me, that was rewarding, you know, just awakening one human soul to the gifts and tools that they have in life. For me, that was good enough.
And that's going to actually move into my next question. Is there any advice or encouraging words in general you'd like others to know? As you mentioned about your friend, for example, many near-death experiencers come back seeing and living life differently. They discover purpose, etc. What would you share with others on this particular topic?
Yes, I mean, this life, you know, as I came back to it, I felt that it's a gift. This is a school of life. This is a school of learning. And it's a valuable gift that we have to live it on a daily basis. That love is the key. So it's the love that I mean, is the love that, like, as Buddha says, love is a bird. It has two wings, compassion and wisdom. If one of the wings is broken, the bird cannot fly. So that kind of love, the loving wisdom, kind compassionate love is the key. And I'm trying, you know, that's my work, that's my learning, to embody that love in my daily living, in my coaching practices, even though I'm working, you know, with the leaders and the CEOs, you know, and very serious, you know, business people. I'm trying to embody and awakening them to that kind of love as a leader. And I always says, live your life the way that when you want to die, die happy. So it's just that, and hear your calling, and you don't have to be dead to learn how to live. And listen to universe, see what universe is whispering to your ear as your calling. What's your calling? Why are you in this earth? What's your mission? And who you want to be, so you can die happy, and not only live happy, you can also die happy. And the other thing is just that we are all one. We are all one soul. While I was standing there, I found out that we are soul particles. So you and I are not separate. We eventually become one as we have been one. And let's live this life just like that, that as a one being. We are one consciousness. And that kind of, you know, insight and awakening, it helps the transition and transformation to transcending to the higher level of consciousness.
So ultimately, it sounds to me that your near-death experience mirrored what you and your parents were already doing with the charitable deeds and caring for the less fortunate, would you say?
Exactly. You put it very beautifully, you know, circle back again to where I came from. So exactly, just like all the religions are pointing to one destination. It's just a different path. So all of us that are following, you know, the spirituality and humanity or different religions, we are going to one place, but we are using the different path in different way.
So where can the audience find you and your organization and your work in regards to spiritual counseling?
Yeah, I don't call it a spiritual counseling. I call it, you know, coaching with a focus on emotional intelligence and spiritual intelligence, which I'm certified in it. And I have a website, www.myconscious.org. And my email is coach, COACH, @myconscious.org. We are also on social media, which I would love that people follow us. We are on Instagram, and we are on LinkedIn, and we are on Facebook, My Conscious Coaching Group, and also Twitter too. So please follow us, and we will be in touch.
Well, Dr. Kasai, I want to thank you for coming on Real Spiritual Talk Radio. Your account was very enlightening and encouraging.
Thank you very much. I also appreciate you, and I'm grateful for you doing this wonderful work, you know, all for free for the public, to raise the education and awareness and the near-death experience. And God bless you, and wish you well and the best.
I thank you, and same to you. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Kianush Kasai, and I want to thank you all for tuning in to another edition of Real Spiritual Talk Radio. Please catch me on my Facebook page, Real Spiritual Talk Radio. There you will find past shows and other relevant information as they pertain to near-death experiences. Once again, I hope you have all been spiritually enlightened, as I always am when I am listening to these accounts. And with that said, I am your host, Lamont Gates, and this is Real Spiritual Talk Radio, now signing off.